Naomi Shihab Nye, a former chancellor of the Academy of American Poets, has been entertaining listeners as an itinerant teacher and speaker for four decades. Her 30-plus books of poetry and prose have earned numerous fellowships and prizes. In April 2019, the San Antonio poet was presented the Texas Institute of Letters 2018 Lifetime Achievement Award. I'm Angela Elam with New Letters Magazine, and I got her into our studio here at UMKC. When she was the keynote speaker at the 2017 National Storytelling Network Conference in Kansas City. The theme was All Our Voices, Stories of Immigration and Migration. And part of this interview was in an earlier New Letters on the Air when she read from newer books, including her 2018 collection, Voices in the Air. This half focuses on her 2011 book, Transfer, in memory of Aziz Shihab, her father, a Palestinian journalist who immigrated to America and married a teacher from St. Louis and eventually moved the family from Missouri to Texas. Naomi Shihab Nye has been on our show a couple of times before. One was an interview we did on the phone way, way, way back. And then another one from when you were at the DNA Children's Festival here.
Oh, nice. That was so much fun.
And you gave that talk during April, so it was National Poetry Month, and you were really talking about the importance of poetry. And both of the shows are just lovely.
Oh, thank you very much. And there were such great people here, Daniel Handler and
yes.
Kate DiCamillo. And
yes.
Just such a fun time we all had. I love Kansas City.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your work. I saw where you participated in a book that had photographs of Texas. Did it include your husband's photographs? Is he still doing photography?
He is. He's doing photography full time, and he's doing audio components also, and he's working on a book and a show called My Heart Is Not Blind that is being done with citizens who lack visual sight but are wonderful thinkers and dreamers and seers, visionaries without visual sight. So that will all come to be. But he's been working on it for about 10 years, this particular show. The Texas, either you're talking about the Texas anthology that I made that included about 100 Texans and 36 paintings by different Texans, or I also...
Between Heaven and Texas.
Okay, that was a different one. Yeah. I edited Sky Poems for that book, and that was a photographer named Wyman Meinzer.
Okay.
And it came out from University of Texas Press, and they just asked me because they knew I was an anthologist. I had made 8 anthologies at the time, and that's all I plan ever to make, by the way. And they wanted someone to quickly come up with the certain number of sky poems, which wasn't hard to do at all. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. By Texas poets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Right.
I like that.
It's a beautiful book, the Wyman Meinzer book. It is gorgeous.
I'm going to have to get my hands on
it. It is gorgeous.
You know, it's interesting because your family played such a big part in the shows that we did together because there were poems about your grandmother who lived to be 106.
106.
And then poems about your father.
Yeah.
And I was wondering to myself a few weeks ago when we were talking about doing this interview how your father was doing. And then I picked up your books and I found out he's passed away.
He died 10 years ago. You know, for anyone in our listening realm who has had a beloved parent die, that sense that they are with you always is really something hard to understand until it happens and they're gone, but they're still there. So I've had this interesting ongoing 10 years with his memory and his voice in my head and in his notebooks and in his own writings and just a sense of experiencing the world maybe doubly much or in a slightly different way because he's not physically in the world, but imagining always what he would say about things, how he would feel about things. And I think you do feel a doubled responsibility when a beloved parent dies to sort of represent them in the world and live for them too. But it is also a particular gift to be able to use language to write about them and evoke them. And I've been very touched by how many people, you know, come to me and say, I read your book Transfer, that are poems I wrote after he died. And they'll say, you know, it's amazing, even though I had a completely different experience, my father wasn't an immigrant or something, I so identified with that sense of staying close And I think that's what we try to do. We try to stay close to meaning in our lives and to what has given us encouragement. So I hope he would be pleased with that. My mother is doing great. She's 90. She recently moved back to the city where we live, San Antonio, Texas. And she did that so she could be near her only great-grandson,
oh, wow,
who is a super charming individual, and my grandson. So we are all enamored. Yes, he does take after my father, and he's kind of obsessed with pictures of my father, which I find interesting. I'll find him running around the house clutching framed photographs of my father, and I'll wonder, why does he pick that one photograph every time he's here to run around with? It's almost as if he has some strong genetic strain coming from my father. And actually, his personality as a 16-month-old reminds me of my father more than anyone else in the family does. So,
oh my gosh.
So that's kind of interesting. Yeah, so life goes on, and I'm very grateful that my mother is happy and healthy and able to enjoy this time with all of us.
Where had she and your dad lived?
Well, they had lived in Dallas for many years. My father was with the Dallas Morning News before he died, and he had retired from that. And he had started actually a community paper of his own for a while. And he loved public speaking. He was very involved, engaged with the community. But then after his death, my mom stayed on in Dallas for going on 10 years. But after my grandson was born, she decided she would like to live in close proximity to the cutest little baby. So she moved down to San Antonio, and we're happy to have her there.
That is really wonderful. Well, the book Transfer, I love the way that you've assembled this because it's a book of poetry primarily, though there is a little bit of prose in it.
A few prose pieces slipped in, right?
Right. But I love the fact that on the opening page of the book, which is usually just a page where you have, you know, in memory of, you actually have a poem that opens it. And then on the back cover of the book, you have a poem that ends it. There's just something about the way that it's from cover to cover.
Thank you.
Is beautiful. Do you want to read that opening poem?
Because I would love to. I never read that.
Who don't know his background, it's a great first introduction.
Yes, and actually he immigrated from Palestine to Kansas and then moved to Missouri. So it's very appropriate to read it right here. In loving memory of our father, Aziz Shihab. Aziz, our father, who was always our father, not always our father. Refugee, not always, once a confident schoolboy strolling Jerusalem streets. He knew the alleyways, spoke to stones. All his life, he would pick up stones and pocket them. On some, he drew faces. What do we say in the wake of one who was always homesick? Are you home now? Is Palestine peaceful in some dimension we can't see? Do Jews and Arabs share the table? Is holy in the middle?
Aziz, that's what opens the book Transfer, poems by Naomi Shihab Nye, and this is New Letters on the Air.
He was always so haunted by, you know, having been born and grown up in the holy city, as three major world religions might call it, Jerusalem, and yet holiness being so elusive there, a real feeling of, well, we're living in the ways, the best ways that humans know how to share a space. Well, no, they're not. So that was something that stayed with him all his days. And right before he died, literally the day before his death, the hospital chaplain asked him if he still had hope for the holy city. And he said, of course I do. You never wake up in the morning and say, I hope today they'll be fighting around my house. You wake up and you hope for a good day. So as long as people hope for a good day, maybe they'll figure it out.
We hope.
I hope.
Hope
we all
being
hope.
The word.
But thank you. He would be very touched that you asked me to read that. And actually, I'm here in Kansas City with the National Storyteller Network. And their theme this year is immigration and migration. And so I mentioned something about no refugee intends to be a refugee. That's not part of your dream CV. I will be a refugee in my life. I mean, that's not anything somebody chooses. it's a desperate circumstance.
You were the perfect keynote speaker for this.
Thank
I think,
you. So. I do respect immigrants tremendously, and I think they're very, very brave. And it's haunting that we're speaking today, of all days, and this so-called travel ban or whatever it is. You know, I was thinking the other day, I wish Iraq had done a travel ban on Americans. That would have been good. I mean, they might still have more of a culture and community left. Their city might not be so wrecked up. It's sad. I mean, I'm not blaming Americans for everything bad that happened in Iraq, but certainly we contributed to disaster there. And even if we did it with so-called good intentions, which many of us questioned from day one,
it was still
it's a disaster. It was destructive. And war is destructive. And my father wrote about it so much before he died. We shouldn't fight in other people's nations. We should do everything in our power to encourage education and healthcare and diplomacy and good stuff. Stuff that nobody would argue with.
Poetry.
Poetry. Art. Baghdad saw itself as a city of great culture, great deep culture. I remember President Bush saying, and I know because I took notes during his speeches in those days, you know, we respect the deep, long culture of the people of Baghdad. I also think of cities like Aleppo, one of the great, beautiful cities of the world, and all the destruction that happened in Syria. And I think of the mysteries of leaders who want to be leaders, even when half their country opposes them, as in Syria. I can't explain what happened there, but it's a catastrophe for all the people who loved art and beauty. So heartbreaking.
So much that's been destroyed.
So much loss.
In this last couple of decades
yes.
in particular. There's a prose piece at the beginning of this, your introduction to this and how this book came about, because it's not just a book about grieving and loss. It's also honoring your father through his own words. It's just a very interesting story. So I didn't know if you wanted to read this introduction or just talk about it.
Well, I'd be honored to read it. So I have a quote at the top from Alastair Reid, the Scottish poet whom I loved, from his poem called My Father Dying. The last line of that poem is, "Then I will begin with you that hesitant conversation going on and on and on." My father wanted us to write a book together. A dialogue, he called it. But he kept sending me monologues by email and fax. Rants on topics I'd heard him discuss many times. Frustrations, difficulties, peculiarities of a long life in exile. Perspectives on this and that. He was already on dialysis. I would have done anything he wanted. I tried to respond to what he sent, but he'd send another monologue instead. He wouldn't answer questions. There was no continuity. "So what is a dialogue, Dad?" I asked. "Where is the back and forth?" "You're letting me down," he wrote. "You're not doing it right. I want to do it, but you're refusing." There was no thread. So now he's immigrated again to a country beyond sight, and I keep talking. 2 weeks after he died, I carried a stack of incomplete notebooks from his messy office to my messy office. "Now what?" I said. "Can you hear me? Are you anywhere? I'll type up some of your lines, your spare and elegant English longhand, and see if anything answers. It may not work, but I'm thinking about how 'What Can I Do?' became your anthem. It was the empty cup you held out with a trembling hand. Something might come along. It's not so much that I want him still here for me. It's that I can't stand the thought of the world without him in it. He loved the world. The world frustrated him endlessly, but he loved it and hoped for it. He'd step out of his bedroom each morning with flair, as if onto a stage, freshened face, clean shirt. 'Hello, my friend,' to people he encountered. I wonder now if this were his method for deflecting possible racism or rejection. 'Hello, friend,' to every waitress and shoe salesman. We argued with him when we were kids. 'Dad, you don't even know her.' 'Well, she'll be my friend faster if I say that.' When the Midwest Quarterly invited me to submit a series of poems, I thought of how my father had first immigrated to the American Midwest in 1951 as a college student and used some of his notebook lines as titles, thinking I would write the poems which followed. The little series, Just Call Me Aziz, emerged in his voice, so it still wasn't a dialogue.
That's the beginning of the introduction to Naomi Shihab Nye's book, Transfer, in memory of her father, Aziz Shihab.
It was a big surprise to me after I copied down his own lines that were sort of drifting on full pages with just like a single line handwritten at the top or in the middle. It was a surprise to me when I tried to think about writing poems with these titles that the poems wanted to come out in his voice, because I never would have imagined that presumption. I will now speak in the voice of this person I love who has died. I mean, I just wouldn't have thought of that. But somehow the lines invited me to do that and said it was okay. I could read one of the poems that came out in his voice.
That would be lovely.
Yeah. This was a line in his notebook, just floating there. Many asked me not to forget them. And I knew he was thinking back to when he first immigrated to the United States, and he was haunted by all the people who said to him, why are you going? Don't leave us. We need you here. His own mother. No, people didn't want him to leave. And how hard that is if someone's moving to the other side of the earth and you don't know if you'll ever see them again. Also because he was a journalist, first a radio journalist and then a newspaper journalist, he felt like people should know things. Like when you heard of a place where there was great trouble, you should know the backstory. You should know what's been going on there. And he would feel really anxious if something was happening in the Sudan and he realized he didn't know that much about what had been happening before. So there was this sense of, it's hard to be an expert on everything, but he was always hungry for more knowledge. Like, let's check things out or let's find out. So here's the poem that felt like it was more his voice than mine. Where do you keep all these people? The shoemaker with his rumpled cough, the man who twisted straws into brooms. My teacher, oh, my teacher, I will always cry when I think of my teacher. The olive farmer who lost every inch of ground, every tree, who sat with head in his hands in his son's living room for years after. I tucked them into my drawer with cufflinks and bow ties, touched them each evening before I slept, wished them happiness and peace, peace in the heart. No wonder we all got heart trouble. But justice never smiled on us. Why didn't it? I tried to get Americans to think of them, but they were too involved with their own affairs to imagine ours. And you can't blame them, really. How much do I think of Africa? I always did feel sad in the back of my mind for places I didn't have enough energy to worry about.
Many asked me not to forget them, from the book Transfer. I'm talking with Naomi Shihab Nye today on New Letters on the Air, and we're talking about her father, Aziz, who died in 2007. You know, for you, it must have been, even though I know he was diabetic and then he had heart problems and other things, but the fact that his mother lived to be 106 and he died, was he 70 when he died?
He was 80.
Mm-hmm. Which is a ripe old age, but you know, somehow if you have a grandmother who's 106, you think he's going to stick around for a
while. Right. And he had such vital interest in the world. I mean, he wasn't an old-seeming person. He was very youthful and curious and always asking questions. But, you know, there are points when the physical form just doesn't live up to the mind's energy. And so his body started being very hard to negotiate for him and navigate. And I'm very grateful that he was able to talk up till, you know, I was talking to him 30 minutes before he died. And
oh, that is nice.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's not how it is towards
yeah,
the
no,
end.
It's hard. And, you know, I've had other people I know have loved ones who, say, went into some kind of comatose state for as long as 10 years or a kind of dementia for many, many years. And that's very difficult in another way. But that feeling of presence is one that has haunted me in these recent years, because my father would be, I think, quite fascinated and horrified by everything going on right now.
Oh, yeah.
He wouldn't believe it.
He didn't live long enough to see
President Obama.
No,
he died right on the brink of President Obama, you know, being the candidate, really. And we talked about Barack Obama before he died, and he was fascinated by him.
Yeah.
You know, he loved his half and half background and his intellect and his eloquence. And, you know, he'd heard him give talks and speeches. And I remember he said, oh, I could really wish that he would be the president, but I think it's too much to hope for still. And so that intrigued me after he died. And then, of course, President Obama was elected twice. And then thinking, wow, Dad, this would really make you happy.
Because you wouldn't believe
this could happen. Mm-hmm. But he also wouldn't believe what's happening now could happen. So, you know, I think there are all kinds of unbelievable things in the world, and how do we accommodate them, and how do we stay balanced? And I think that's one place where stories and poems can really hearten us.
Yes.
Because they belong to the common person. They belong to the person who's not running the nation, who doesn't have billions of dollars, who's not trying to manipulate anyone other than maybe manipulate people toward enjoyment or a feeling of empathy, which is a good kind of manipulation, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah. I think those of us who grew up as readers or grew up believing in the power of text to give us comfort and give us inspiration, maybe we need it twice as much right now.
I think we do.
We do. And to keep heartening one another.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see people amongst our own circles of friends who are all kind of different ways of being right now, you know, and just being heartening for one another is important.
Exactly.
Yeah.
These pendulum swings are tough.
They're very tough. I know a young woman. She's a very talented poet. She lives in California, and she made a button recently just to help herself feel better. Her name is Emily Ligren, and the button just says, "Open for conversation." Because she realized...
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, and she wears it and walks around Oakland, California, where she lives. She works in education. And she just felt like there are a lot of people maybe I feel like I don't understand right now in our country. And maybe if we talked, they could help me. Or maybe if they listened to me, I could help them. So she said it's caused a lot of great things to happen. So she was giving this button away at a poetry workshop recently in California. I loved it.
Well, I'm going to have you read one more poem from Transfer, and it's what the title came out of, Scared, Scarred, Sacred.
Wow, I would love to read that. I've never read this poem out loud.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, this is a first. I was writing it when the editor for this book asked me, so why are you calling it Transfer exactly? I mean, like, what is the significance of transfer? And so I started thinking of these different kinds of transfers, you know, a bus transfer and a transfer on a plain bag, and then how we transfer from one physical state into a metaphysical disappeared state, and also this kind of mystery. You know, I've always been fascinated since I was a kid, and I am in Kansas City too, because you have the greatest architecture here. Going down streets and you look at these amazing houses, old, new, some mixed together, and you think, wow, who lives in that house? I want to meet those people. I want to see those people. And that feeling that I was having trying to get him out of his own, you know, sense of gloom toward his death, let's go look at some new neighborhoods that we've never paid any attention to. But it was too late for him to feel curious right then. He was just in too much pain. And it kind of reminds me that there's a William Carlos Williams poem, The Last Words of My English Grandmother. I hadn't even thought this before, but she says in the poem, what are those things outside the window? And someone says, trees, because she's losing her grip on language. And she says, I'm tired of them. I don't want to see them anymore. It kind of is how his mood was on that day.
And there's something, too, about just the title of that, Scared, Scarred, Sacred.
Wow, they're so similar, those words.
They're similar, and the letters, and you're transferring from one word to another in a way. So,
right. And they're all present in all parts of the three parts of the poem.
Exactly.
Like, I'm scared in the first part, and he's scarred and exhausted, and then all of it is sacred.
Yeah.
You know, memory being sacred in each one of us. You know, one thing I'm often reminded of, Angela, is like people will come up and tell you, oh, years ago I met you and you said such and such, and they'll quote you. And usually it's something you have no memory of saying or not even an idea, like what was the occasion in which I would have said that? And that fascinates me how we're all sort of living multiple lives simultaneously. You know, we're the person we think we are, but then we're a different person in someone else's perception of us. Or, you know, you encounter someone and they go home and they remember you in a certain way. And it may or may not be the way you would like to be remembered. But it's fascinating, and also then how your memory could keep growing and changing. Wasn't there a game? Letters scrambled. How many words make a move? Rode a bus down Del Mar, 1955. Red brick buildings, shining windows. Wizard of Oz in a theater scared me. Midgets, witches, flying house. Coming home, sat in long back seat. Daddy, what's that ticket in your hand? Our transfer for another bus when we get off this one. He wore a white shirt, held the ticket tightly. Why? Why, Daddy? Because this bus only goes so far. Then we need another one, a different direction. We need a different direction bus. Why? Because it's where we live. I didn't want to live on that screen. Lions, scarecrows, crazy sidewalk, shiny shoes. You'll be with me, right? I can hold your hand? Yes, he said, watching closely, not to miss the stop. Later, he traveled everywhere, with and without us. He felt safer traveling, wanting to be elsewhere, restless, gone. I find stacks of pink transfer tags in his drawer, pulled off suitcases, but saved. Tickets to Algeria. When did you go to Algeria, Dad? Cards, napkins with numbers. He dreamed of doing something great for peace, international healing, but argued with people close by, found ways to rumple their fur. There's a house with a shabby yard, old man living alone inside. On a day of great pain, my father said, let's go see that man. He needs us. He wished to see a man he did not know. The man closed the door in our faces. No, thank you. I'm fine. Driving through garden neighborhoods, blocks from his home, blossoming streets we'd never toured, I asked, have you seen these before? He shielded his eyes. Not before and not now either. I don't want to see them, he said. When do we get there, that place we are going? What have we hauled along? It was too much, wasn't it? Small satchel would have been sufficient, tucked under the seat. All your life you were flying back to your lost life, dropping down like the Oz house. You kept the key, as Palestinians do. You kept the door knocker. And now you are homeless for real. Fire ate your body. You became as big as the sky.
Scared, Scarred, Sacred by Naomi Shihab Nye from her 2011 book, Transfer, published by Boa Editions. She's written a newer poem, For Aziz, in her 2018 collection, Voices in the Air, Poems for Listeners from HarperCollins Green Willow Books. Hear her read from that collection and more in our earlier show featuring the other half of this interview on our website, newletters.org. We talked in 2017 when Naomi Shihab Nye was keynote speaker for the National Storytelling Network Conference, which is hosting a summit in July. New Letters on the Air is a production of New Letters Magazine at UMKC with partial financial support from the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter. Thanks for today's show goes to Cedric Hurt, Danny Reeves, and Jamie Walsh, and to you for listening to New Letters on the Air. I'm Angela Elam.